I now call this remote meeting of the House Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee to order. Good morning, everyone. We're going to begin by taking the roll.
Chair Long.
Present.
I believe Vice Chair Akam is excused. Minority Leader Swedzinski.
Here.
Representative Bierman.
Present.
Representative Bo.
Present.
Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Franson.
Present.
Oh, my apologies, Representative Akam. I believe you are here. Representative Akam?
Present for a bit. I have a hearing to go to, but I'm here for now.
My apologies. Representative Grunhagen?
Present.
Representative Hollins?
Present.
Representative Hornstein?
Present.
Representative Igo?
Present.
Representative Lee?
Present.
Representative Lippert?
Present.
Representative Lislegard?
Present.
Representative Mecklens?
Present.
Representative Munson?
Present.
Representative Stevenson?
Present.
A quorum is present, and we have some minutes to move. We have the minutes from February 9th, 2021. Representative Akam, have you had a chance to review those minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have, and I move approval.
Any discussion to the minutes from February 9th? Representative Swedzinski, is it to the minutes or another topic?
Just right afterward would be great. Thank you.
Okay. Seeing no discussion to the minutes, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. Representative Swedzinski, question before we begin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a general question. So this is kind of the second or third hearing that we've had where we're hearing bills that have not yet been introduced, just kind of going over language, you know. What is the plan with these bills? Are you actually planning to bring them back for individual hearings again, or we can? Are you just planning on putting these in an omnibus bill? You know, are we going to be working on the budget anytime soon? What's the course here? What's the plan?
Thank you for the question, Representative Swedzinski. So, as you know, and for members of the public, we are operating remotely, and so that's created a lot of challenges for. Our staff were also operating remotely, so there's been a backup at the revisor's office for some time. So getting bills referred to committee has been a challenge, but we only have limited committee time to meet, so we do need to keep moving on bills. Most of the bills that we're hearing are being laid over or would be laid over even if we had them in front of us for possible inclusion in an omnibus, so we're certainly not going to move out any bills or take any action. And we can't on a discussion draft, but we're trying to keep the business of the committee moving forward. Some of the bills today are renewable development account bills, so those would wind up in a finance bill. Hopefully that answers your question, Representative Swedzinski.
So your plan is then to potentially, so the next time we'll see these bills that we're hearing that have not introduced yet, or even will they be introduced as individual bills, or will you just take the language that's out there and plunk them all into a omnibus bill, and then we debate that?
Representative Swedzinski, my understanding is that all of these bills will be introduced as standalone bills, and some of them are getting introduced even this week, but it's taken time to get them introduced in time for the hearing. Representative Franson, really quickly, and then we have to start with the day.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just piggybacking off of Representative Swedzinski, is it difficult for a jacket to be put on the bill that's already been, or the language that's already, you know, the XXX? You know, isn't they just put a jacket on that and then you find a bill author and they sign on to the bill?
That's the backup I was referring to, Representative Franson, for the revisor. That's what's taking some time. So today we have Electric Vehicle Day, and we will be taking some hearing from folks to begin with about the state of electric vehicles in our state. We are doing this hearing in conjunction with Chair Hornstein's Transportation Committee. Representative Hornstein, would you like to say some welcoming words for Electric Vehicle Day?
Well, thank you, Representative Long and members. This is a very important issue as we, move into solutions as it relates to climate change and mobility. And there are a number of issues that are under the jurisdiction of the Climate and Energy Committee. Several are under the jurisdiction of the Transportation Committee. So this really is an energy and transportation issue. And so Chair Long and I thought that it would be good to use today's hearings in each of our committee to highlight some of the issues as they relate to electric vehicles and infrastructure.
So if you like what you see here for this morning's hearing, you can tune in this afternoon to the Transportation Committee and learn some more from Representative Hornstein's committee. So first, we are going to have a panel, and then we will be taking up four bills later today. And to kick us off on our panel is Brendan Jordan with Drive Electric Minnesota. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Brendan Jordan with the Great Plains Institute, and I serve as a facilitator for Drive Electric Minnesota. I'll keep my remarks brief today. You're going to be hearing a lot of great perspectives during this hearing, and I commend the chair for giving this issue the attention it deserves. Drive Electric Minnesota is a broad statewide partnership, including every type of utility, investor-owned, municipal, rural electric cooperatives. Our partnership includes local governments, charging station providers, EV manufacturers and automakers, auto dealers, and a variety of nonprofit organizations. I'd like to just briefly emphasize for the committee that we see electric vehicles, transportation electrification, as a statewide opportunity, and one that's much broader than simply personal electric vehicles. We see opportunities for EV owners to save money on fuel and maintenance, but also an opportunity for fleet operators to save money on fuel and maintenance for their fleets, and for a variety of new mobility services, such as higher quality electrified transit, car sharing, even electric bicycles. This is a technology that presents manufacturing opportunities in the state of Minnesota for jobs all over the state, and statewide job opportunities installing and maintaining EV charging stations. This is a growing opportunity for more investment in our state in a rapidly expanding industry. Drive Electric Minnesota is supportive of new policy to expand the economic and environmental opportunities this industry presents. You'll be hearing a number of bills today, and I won't weigh in right now on specific bills, but I'll just offer at a high level that Drive Electric Minnesota supports the idea of purchase incentives to help accelerate the market, catalyze the market. We're very supportive of utility investments in electric vehicle programs. We feel like those can benefit utility customers. We are supportive of EVs paying their fair share and fair taxation, which we could go into in more detail. And supportive of increased investments in EV infrastructure. Mr. Chair, I think I'm at my allotted time, and you'll be hearing from a number of others, so I'll conclude my remarks at this point, but would be happy to take additional questions or follow up with any members that have more questions about our work.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Next, we'll be hearing from Josh Fisher with the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. Mr. Fisher, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. We're happy to be here today. Let me share my screen here so I can go through my presentation for you. Okay, we all set there?
We sure are.
All right, great. So again, I'm Josh Fisher with the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. We represent the vehicle manufacturers, and the manufacturers we represent produce about 99% of all the light-duty cars and trucks sold in the U.S. But we also represent several technology companies and automotive suppliers that are involved in the AV and EV space. So we like to say that we represent the entire automotive value chain. So I think it's helpful to understand the EV market. We first need to understand the overall vehicle market and where EVs fit into that space. So here, I think this chart really helps show you where the market is in terms of the impact that COVID has had on the industry, and just the sales trends overall, you can see that January sales of 2021 are the highest they've been since the pandemic started in the US. But the next challenge is going to be addressing the microchip shortage that has popped up, and we could possibly see as fewer than 250,000 units through the first quarter of 2021. So that's going to be a challenge. Next slide here is overall ZEV sales throughout the U.S. here. You can see that the upward trend in popularity of, I'm sorry, I skipped a couple here. There we go. The sales of zero emission vehicles accounted for about 2.9% of total vehicle sales in January 2021, and that's up a little bit from the previous year. But I think the real critical point is that we haven't reached an inflection point in the U.S. When it comes to the sales of zero emission vehicles. And in fact, they've been down about 12% year over year, given the the impacts of the pandemic that we've seen. And so what's really driving the market right now? The upward trend in the popularity of light trucks has been pretty steady since 2013. You can see the blue line here on the graph. And that's really been driven by the decline of gas prices by that yellow line you see on the chart there. So as fuel prices drop, popularity of trucks and SUVs really shot up. And in Minnesota, they count trucks and SUVs account for about 80% of the new vehicle market. So a bit about the industry's commitment to EVs. Our members are all in on electric vehicles. Right now, there are over 40 electric vehicle models in the market. And collectively, our members have committed to spend about $250 billion by 2023 on electrification. So I think it's safe to say the future of the industry is electrified. And this is just a graph representing the coming EV models. So you can see by about 2025, we expect over 130 new EV models in the market. And so now let's take a look at Minnesota's EV market. I want to start by just giving you a map of the US. And you can see which states have the highest EV sales. Particularly those states on the West Coast, Washington, Oregon, California, and then you have Colorado. Those are the best EV markets in the US right now. And the common denominator among those markets is that all those states have robust consumer incentives and infrastructure funding. That is really, those are the two best policies that any state can adopt right now to help grow the EV market. And just for reference, Minnesota's EV sales are about 1.5% of new vehicle sales, which is a bit below the 2% national average. Now, this map here gives you an idea of where in Minnesota EVs have the greatest penetration. The blue colors show you the higher percentage per 10,000 residents. So probably not much of a surprise that in the urban Twin Cities area, that you have a higher concentration of EV purchasers. And here you have another graph just showing total auto sales on the left there. You had about 211,000 new vehicles sold in Minnesota in 2020. And then you had about a little over 3,000 of those were zero emission vehicles. So what can the state of Minnesota and the industry do to promote electric vehicles? Because it really is a shared commitment. Our members can make the vehicles, but we need to partner with states and the federal government to develop the policies that are really going to help incentivize consumers to make the switch to electric vehicles and give them the confidence that they need that they'll be able to charge those vehicles. So you see here, it's really about cost, infrastructure, and customers. We have to address all of these buckets together at the same time. We have to address the cost of the electric vehicle. You have to make the consumer incentivized to make the switch to EVs. And you have to give them the awareness and the comfort and the capability of these vehicles. And you also have to give them the confidence that the infrastructure is going to be there, that no matter where they are, they'll be able to charge their vehicle, whether they're near home, at work, or crossing state lines. It's really going to be critical to give consumers confidence so when they make that switch, it's just as seamless as their gas-powered vehicles are right now. And so what are some of the policies that we're committed to working with or committed to working on in Minnesota and across the country? Purchase incentives, can't emphasize that enough. Building out infrastructure, just as critical. We think state fleet purchase requirements are really important. to help promote the EV market, developing and adopting a low carbon fuel standard to help decarbonize the fuels that are used in the transportation system. And the benefit of a low carbon fuel standard is it raises money that can then be reinvested into incentives and infrastructure and the other policies that Minnesota needs to help grow its market. You know, there are other policies on here, and these are all that we're committed to working on with you to advance the EV market in Minnesota. And that is my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions or provide any more input as we go throughout the meeting. So I, again, appreciate the time.
Thanks so much for being with us. Next, we are going to hear from Jukka Kukkonen with Shift to Electric. Mr. Kukkonen, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I will just share my screen here and get going with it. You should see my slides right now. All right, so my name is Jukka Kukkonen, and I'm a chief EV educator and strategist for Shift to Electric. My job is for the last 10 years has been to follow automotive and EV industries daily, and I also teach EV market and technologies at the University of St. Thomas. I have five slides, but they have so much information that I don't even have time to go read through everything in 5 minutes. So I'll just highlight the main points, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have during the Q&A. So I'm an automotive engineer, and I have trained hundreds of mechanics in past life, so I know technology very well. From technology perspective, it is crystal clear that electric drivetrain will replace internal combustion engine because it is just better technology. They use less energy, they have more power, they are more responsive, they need less maintenance, and are cheaper to own and drive. They can also be powered in our own garages with locally produced energy, so more money stays in Minnesota. These are the reasons why everyone who gets an EV says that they are never going back to gas cars anymore. EVs are car 2.0. And you don't have to believe me on this. Just go test drive one, and you'll understand what I'm talking about. The only area where gas cars still have an advantage is the faster fueling on long trips, but only 5% of trips people take in the US are over 30 miles, and EVs are catching up on that front too, since last year, average range for EVs sold in the US was over 250 miles. Every new technology has a tipping point where market conditions are ripe for strong growth. EVs reached that in Europe last year, as you can see from the graph on the left there. Both Europe and US markets were seeing slow growth over the years, and while consumer surveys were showing that most of the people were not ready for EVs yet, there was always about 30% of people who would say that they would consider an EV. Auto industry used to be talking that they're not sure if there's demand, but when Europe increased their emission standards last year, so that manufacturers actually needed to bring EVs to the market, they learn that the demand is there. EV market share in Europe tripled from 3.3% to 10.2% last year, and they sold 1.4 million EVs. Now the auto industry in Europe forecasts that their EV market share will be 40% in 2025. Even my country of origin, Finland, which is larger, less densely populated, and colder than Minnesota, has seen strong growth. Their EV market last year was 16%, if this can happen there, it for sure can happen in Minnesota too. And auto industry is important for US, and if we don't accelerate our transition to the new technology, European and Chinese manufacturers will happily take care of this growing market. I would like to make sure that US companies don't become carnage because they could not transition to the new tech in timely manner. And the best help with that, we can develop robust home market for them. Traditional other manufacturers are waking up to this, and here are some big announcements that they have made in the last 2 months. GM has set a goal to stop selling gas engine vehicles in 2035, so that gives us a clear goal post too. Volvo is expecting that this will happen in 2030, and that can very well be the case since last year, 40% of their sales in Europe was EVs already. Here's a link where you can find information about EV models presently available in the US and Midwest. Just be aware that not all of these models are actually available in Minnesota dealers, since other manufacturers have not provided enough units to the market. There are over 600 light-duty vehicle make some models available in the US, and we have currently only about a dozen EV models available here in Minnesota. So if you compare this to the Europe, they have over 100 EV models available there, and that's why they are seeing a rapid growth. And here are EV models we are expecting to arrive to US market this year. As you can see, most of them are crossovers, SUVs, and pickup trucks that sell well in Minnesota too. But right now, we have no knowledge which of these will be available at Minnesota dealers. So overall, it is clear that EVs will replace internal combustion engines, whether oil companies like it or not. This is inevitable, so I would encourage everyone here to figure out how we can make this happen in Minnesota. And those of you who are worried that the pace of change will hurt local industries, I can assure you that no matter how hard we would work for this, to accelerate this, it will be gradual evolution and not a revolution. We have now over 5 million internal combustion engine vehicles in Minnesota. Even if we would somehow get enough models to the market so EVs could have 10% market share next year, and the market share would increase by 10% every year from there on, it would still take 30 years for us to replace the whole fleet. So industries have plenty of time to adjust. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kukkonen. Next, we are going to hear from Dean Taylor with Plug-in America. Mr. Taylor, welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm Dean Taylor with Plug-in America on their advisory board, as well as a senior policy consultant. My talk today is focusing on a recent report we did last month on ranking the top states supporting the EV driver as far as policy. Plug-in America is a national education and advocacy organization. You know, the voice of the EV driver, and we go back about 20 years. In December in Minnesota, we sponsored, together with Drive Electric Minnesota, XL Energy, and Sustainable Growth Council, 6 webinars, about 10 hours long. We had over 600 people. We hope to do it again this next December. If you're interested in a deep dive, I really appreciate several of the members of this committee attended and spoke. Going back to the report, I would like to first say that we only looked at policies at the state level, not at the city or local levels, and also not what utilities are necessarily doing, but what they are unable to do. We also only looked at policies that support the light duty driver and not looking at the medium and heavy duty sector. We also did not look at results like EVs per capita or charging stations per capita. With that clarified, we bucketed the policies supporting the EV driver into a few categories: policies supporting the driver pre-purchase, policies supporting the EV driver during ownership, policies supporting the EV infrastructure, and education and outreach efforts. As you can see from this slide, we only looked at the top 25 states. Minnesota came out number 19. There's only 2 states in the Great Plains, so regionally you're doing well, and there are 5 states in the Mountain West with the rest of them on the coast. You can see the full report by going to our website in the policy section. There are many ways for Minnesota to reach the top 10 or even the top 5 states. On this slide, I've highlighted 4 areas that could easily boost you into the top 10. One is an EV purchase incentive. The other is the clean fuels policy, the enhancing authority of the Public Utilities Commission with legislation, and programs to train dealers and sell EVs. There's plenty of other things that you could do to easily get into the top 5 states as well. For example, there are actions, not just legislative, but actions by agencies that also could boost you into the top 5. I understand that all of these 4 policies that I've highlighted are possibilities for you to pass this year, and we hope you do. We hope when we come back and we do this report next year that Minnesota is made it into the top 10. In addition, I don't have really time to go through all of the different categories here. There's probably a couple dozen, because within each category, there's different levels that you can attain. And some of the policies here are also very low cost. I'd also maybe point out the fair EV fee. Right now you're doing really well. $75 is reasonable, maybe a little bit high, but anything to make that higher, you would end up going backwards, you know, on this ranking system. I'd also like to point out that we have worked together with four other organizations to do a model policy toolkit. This goes into much more detail. There are literally hundreds of policies here in this one. We did it with three other organizations. And we look at not just what legislators can do, but also what transit agencies, governor's offices, state agencies, utility regulators, businesses, and cities. And so you can also find that, you know, at the Plug in America website, if you'd like to go into that. A lot of boilerplate examples, and also encourage you to, you know, look at that. And I think there's some great examples of low-cost legislation in there as well, and links to the actual legislation in the other states. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Taylor. And our final presenter will be Wayne Kugel with Zeus Electric. Welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you very much. And let me quick share my screen. Let me know when you can see my screen.
Looks great.
All right, super. Well, thank you, Representative Long and Representative Hornstein. I really appreciate the time. And we are Zeus Electric Chassis. I'm the CEO of Zeus Electric Chassis, and I'm accompanied by Bob Grinstead, our CTO and founder, and we have other team members on the call as well. We're currently based in Lindstrom, Minnesota, and we'll be moving to White Bear, Minnesota. We'll be moving to White Bear, Minnesota here at April 1st into a larger development facility. We build severe-duty e-mobility work trucks, and the way we define that is when you look into the market space today, I believe Josh has talked through, was wonderful, every supplier you can imagine is coming out with a new model of some sort in EV space, kind of in two big categories, passenger and commercial. And many of those are unique things, step van, a delivery truck, a semi truck, a pickup truck. We're entirely different. We are an actual platform. So we're a configurable severe duty, and we call it EHD, electric, hydraulic, and digital communication, where it's on one platform. And it's a platform that's extensible into all kinds of different vocations. And that's the market space we're after. I won't go much into the market space because it was just covered, but from our point of view, there really are those two big momentum points. There is the policy momentum point, and there's the economic momentum point. Technology in and of itself, we see between 2024 and 2026, that owner and operating crossover point, we will see that inflection. It will be coming because it will be lower cost to operate an electric vehicle than it will combustion. So that momentum is coming. For our specific market, there's about 300,000 vehicles from medium duty all the way up to the heavy duty, just below tractor trailers. That's about a $60 billion market. The medium duty is about $25 billion, and we're going to be cherry picking some segments within those early days in the first couple of years, and that's about a $15 billion market. We've got very strong relationships on all levels. Our go-to-market is going to be through OEMs and upfitters. And we have state, regional, and national players that we've partnered with on that front. Our supply chain is really cool because 80% of our bill of materials is rather local. Our motors are in New Ulm, Minnesota. Our electronics are in Savage, Minnesota. We'll be in White Bear, Minnesota. Our frames and cabins are in Wisconsin. And we have other suppliers in Iowa, Illinois. There's two international players. Our batteries are shipped from Germany, and our suspensions are shipped out of France. But in both of those cases, those manufacturers have committed to us to move that manufacturing to the United States as we start ramping up. And then we're also tied in very closely with California. That's where our first business is going to be. And we've got several organizations helping us literally plug into that transition, because that will be about 11% of the market space that we'll be chasing. Our first contract is with the Sacramento Municipality Utility District, or SMUD. Their board of directors has approved a $1.1 million contract with us, and we want to bring 5 trucks into service by the end of this year. The pictures that you see actually online are those 5 different trucks, and you'll see we have 3 different cabin types and 5 different vocations, all on that same common platform. And if we're successful here, we've got another one, which is an electric boom truck, which is really focused on their space. They have 300 more vehicles that they'll transition to over the next upcoming years. And when we're successful here, well, now we're immediately applicable into electric utilities, municipalities, gas, electric, cable. These are trucks that are in everybody's backyard, right? So you see these every day. And so this is the market space that we're pursuing. I'm going to do a quick little video. This was an open house that we did in White Bear. It was on the 27th of January. So yes, this is real life snow in the background. It was a really exciting day. We had planned for about 20 people and over 100 people showed up. It was really quite a special day for us. And I'll play a little 30-second video. So that wraps it up. Thank you so much. We're on LinkedIn and Zeus Electric Chassis, and we're also on the web, but we're open for questions after this. Back to you, Representative.
Thank you so much, Mr. Kugel, and congratulations on landing your first big contract and making the switch to upgraded facility. It's really exciting to see innovation in Minnesota in the electric vehicle space, and looking forward to seeing what your company does in the future. So with that, we'll take member questions, and I see we have four hands, so I think that'll allow for two questions per member. So we'll start with Representative Munson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the testifiers today to discuss what you're doing to increase electric vehicles in Minnesota. It's a neat technology. A couple weeks ago, we saw a report in committee that showed the carbon footprint of all modes of transportation, and the only carbon-free mode of transportation was walking by foot, because they include the manufacturing and decommissioning energy that's used to mine, manufacture, and then recycle these products. So I kind of take issue with the zero emission vehicle or the ZEV description of the vehicle, because all vehicles have emissions. In fact, that report showed that an all electric vehicle had a higher carbon footprint than a plug-in hybrid gasoline vehicle. So I think we should have a more in-depth discussion about carbon emissions. But my question to the testifiers today is, the United Nations has been really involved in rooting out slavery around the world, specifically in the Congo, with regards to mining of cobalt for electric batteries. I know that most of it right now is for going to laptops and cell phones, but electric vehicle production is really ramping up the demand for cobalt and increasing the amount of slavery. I think there's tens of thousands of children that are enslaved in the Congo mining cobalt. And as we put forward policy from the state, we're actually, requiring that these products be used without any regard for preventing slavery to be used in these products. What is your company doing to track down the supply chain? I heard batteries are coming from Germany, but the minerals sourced for those batteries are likely coming from the cobalt from slave labor of children. What are you doing to identify your supply chains and root out slavery for the process? And I'd take answers from Mr. Kukkonen or the first testifier, Mr. Fisher, if you know more about this.
Maybe we'll turn to Mr. Fisher.
Sure. So, obviously sourcing component parts of EV technology is going to be critically important to the future of the technology. And I know our members are certainly committed to ensuring that those supply chains are as good as they can be. In terms of specific sourcing, I can't really talk about that because I'm not familiar with the report that you're referring to. But obviously, it's definitely a part of the conversation. And, it's critical that to put the U.S. ahead in manufacturing, that a safe source and secure source of these minerals are secured for manufacturing in the U.S.
Representative Munson, second question.
Yeah, I guess I'd like to at least recognize the fact that slavery is being used to mine these minerals, and You know, I mean, there's a lot of minerals that go into these batteries specifically. And when we're talking about, you know, it's one thing to talk about small Tesla cars, but when we talk about school buses and heavy duty trucks, these batteries are sometimes thousands of pounds. You know, over half of that is nickel, which has a, you know, I think most people in this committee would agree has a pretty horrible environmental track record when it's mined outside of the United States under, you know, substandard environmental and human, you know, human conditions for labor. But, I can't in good conscience vote for a bill that supports slavery, even if maybe down the road in the future we're looking at reducing it or we're trying to do stuff about it. I think these large batteries, we're not talking about a 4-ounce battery for a phone. We're talking about thousands of pounds for batteries. And when you know, children are being enslaved and the United Nations is fighting back, and you know, there's a lot of websites out there that are trying to stop the mining in the Congo, I think that we should not as a state be mandating these products and using taxpayer dollars for it. So with that, I thank the committee, and I hope we can have, a deeper conversation about this.
Thanks, Representative Munson. I'll just point out, you mentioned that these products are also in electronics, and Apple, Google, Dell, Microsoft have all been coming under pressure for their cobalt supply. But I'm not hearing you say you're not going to buy a cell phone or a computer in the future. I do know that Tesla has said their next battery is going to be free from cobalt. We have now six questions, and so folks could keep them brief. I'm not sure if we'll be able to fit everybody in, but we'll try. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a general question from like the subsidy standpoint in California. You know, we're told, you know, these cars are exceptionally popular, but we also have to subsidize them. You know, I don't get the crossover. What's the estimate from a subsidy standpoint? Will we be at, like, from a cost perspective in 2035, if this is actually, how much will this cost into the future? What's the estimates from the subsidy standpoint? And then also from a charge station standpoint, you know, from a build out, you know, currently people just go to a gas station to fill up their gasoline in their current cars, but then the government's going to have to build all these electric charge stations. Are there businesses that are looking to just build the charge stations, or are they going to rely on subsidies as well to kind of build that infrastructure, just from a, you know, a foundational standpoint? And then I have a follow-up.
Who would like to take that? Mr. Kukkonen.
I will start by that, Representative Chair. First of all, about the charging, 85% of the EV charging happens at home. So that is the most common place because it's most affordable and also easiest way to power your driving. So that's definitely one big thing there. So need for public charging is much less than what we would think about in the beginning. So that's definitely one thing to take into account here.
A follow-up, Representative Swazinski?
Yes, and then just a general question to kind of the truck manufacturer, the Zeus, very interesting stuff. So are you going to be selling the vehicle as a whole, or will it only be a frame? So like I think of like General Motors selling a frame to like Winnebago, and then they build a motor home on top of it. Like, is that the business plan, or is it, are you going to be selling completed vehicles?
Mr. Cool. Yeah.
Oh, that's absolutely a great question. But I'll also put a quick answer on the first question from the subsidy point of view. If you look at our cost curves as a manufacturer right now, we see within reasonable quantities of sales, our cost curves come down about 50%. So those early subsidies help quite a bit with those initial quantities, but then they come off, and at which time we would no longer expect any kind of subsidy. Going into the second one, our business model, we actually have the entire platform, the lower platform plus the various cabins, and we partner directly with OEMs and upfitters. An example here in St. Paul, we have Truck Utilities. They actually do the upfitting of the OEM bodies of any kind of vocational body on our platform.
Thank you, Mr. Fugel. We're going to have to move on, Representative Swazinski, just for time's sake. Representative Vornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the presenters. I found this very helpful and compelling. And, you know, I think from, the consensus seemed to be that we really have to look at three different buckets, if you will, of policy. Consumer choice, infrastructure incentives. I think that, you know, Mr. Fisher had mentioned that, you know, the more successful states, you know, had a strong combination of the three of those. And I guess maybe this would be for him, even though I think Minnesota scored in the middle of the pack, you know, according to Mr. Taylor's rubric on consumer choice. I'm wondering if, you know, how we can get his number five up to maybe 8, 9, or 10. It seems to me that, you know, that is a very important piece of it. We have to get people into the showrooms and knowing that they have choices and options. What are your thoughts about how we can improve our score on that one?
Mr. Fisher.
Sure. I think you hit it on the head there, Representative Hornstein. And it's right now, and this kind of goes back to the original question about, you know, incentives to consumers. There will be a time where electric vehicles are cost comparable and frankly, maybe cheaper in the long run to own and service. But until that point, you do need supportive policies in the marketplace to ease consumers through that transition. And so the best things you can really do is right now to get those vehicles, electric vehicles, as comparable to cost and ease of use as gas-powered vehicles. That's really the key there. It's not complicated, right? And over time, as more consumers make the transition and costs come down, it'll just be natural, you know, occurrence in the market where EVs become more prevalent. But it's easier to think of it as a bridge right now, the transition period. It's not going to be 20 years. I'm thinking more in terms of incentives and infrastructure, you know, a handful of years to really get us to that inflection point where consumers are comfortable. They can trust that their electric vehicle is going to perform just as well, just as long, and just as easily as their gas-powered vehicle performs right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Chair. Yeah, thanks to the presenters. It's interesting to learn more about this. But I do have a question. You know, my concern is, it was shared by one of the testifiers, I can't remember which one, that the average driving is 30 miles, okay, in Minnesota, I believe. Well, that may be true in the metro area primarily, but when you start looking outstate, you see a lot of vehicles that travel a lot more than 30 miles. For instance, if you are a state representative up in Roseau, Minnesota, I think it's more than 250 miles to the Capitol. So you're going to have to stop and charge up on the way. So how long does it take to recharge one of these batteries again? Right now we're filling up with gas, but how long does it take to recharge if you drive more than 250 miles? Think if you take a vacation up to Canada, okay? You're going to be driving more than 250 miles one direction. So how long does it take to recharge these batteries? And what do you, so that's my first question.
Mr. Kukkonen.
Okay, so I think that's an excellent question. Thank you, Representative, for that. So first of all, if you have a long distance drive and you're a little unsure about the range of the cars that are available and if they fit your need, the easiest way is always to go with the plug-in hybrid option. Not go the full electric, but choose a plug-in hybrid, which after the first EV miles, then you have gas engine there in hybrid mode, so you can drive to North Dakota any day you want. No problem with that. So that's the easy answer to that. Then for the long distance trips with full electric cars, I'll give you an example. We drove to Grand Marais. We live in Twin Cities. We drove to Grand Marais last summer with our EV, had a vacation there. And so we drove from here to Duluth, plugged our car in the fast charger there, went to find something to eat. After we came back from eating a pizza, the car was already waiting for us ready there. So it was about 35 minutes that it took for it to charge. So it usually takes longer for me to fuel myself than my car to fuel itself in a long trip like this.
So, Representative Grunhagen, if you don't mind, if we could, if you're willing to limit
just
it
to one more quick question.
If you're willing to limit it to one question, one then more. We'll be able to get our last two in. Would that be all right?
Okay. Quick question is, you know, we just saw in Texas that the windmills froze up and they did have battery backups in many cases. But because of the cold weather, which was much warmer than what we had here, the efficiency dropped by 60% in the battery. So if we have 20 to 30 below zero, how much do these batteries in these electric cars lose in efficiency under severe cold weather? Thank you, Mr. Chair. If one of them want to respond.
Looks like Mr. Kukkonen is ready. Mr.
Well, Kukkonen. I will not be talking anything about Texas and windmills because that's a totally different topic. But with electric cars, when you drive them in a colder weather, when we had the shorter range EVs with the smaller batteries, we saw a pretty big drop on them, maybe 50% of the range, even in cold weather. Now, when you have a bigger batteries, less or smaller percentage of that battery is actually needed for the heating of the car interior, and we have more energy efficient heat pump heating systems. So we are now talking about 30 in max, in a worst case scenario, 40% drop in a range in a winter time. As long as you're aware of it, that's fine. And if that doesn't work for you, as I said, plug-in hybrids are an option. You don't necessarily have to go with the full electric.
So I apologize, Representative Lippert and Representative Eichel. We ran out of time, but if we have time at the end, we'll come back to your two questions. Thank you very much for our presenters. So now we are going to be hearing four bills, and first will be Representative Stevenson's bill. Representative Stevenson, would you care to present your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm pleased to talk to you today about my bill related to electric vehicles. Before I get into that, I do just want to let Representative Gruenhagen know that I drive an electric vehicle, and when the weather was 10 below in recent days, I was able to comfortably drive from my home up in Coon Rapids all the way down here to the Capitol, and with ample range to spare and return. So appreciate his concern, but they are hardy vehicles that perform very well in the cold. I was before this committee last week to talk about the clean energy transition. I had a bill related to that. And this week we're talking about a different revolution in a different sector, the transportation sector. And as you've heard this morning, electric vehicles are cleaner, cheaper to own and operate, and I might add, a whole lot of fun to drive. And anyone who hasn't driven an EV should take the opportunity to find a friend who has one and take it for a spin, or go out to it. Even better, go out to their dealer and take a test drive. Every Minnesotan who wants to purchase an EV should have the opportunity to purchase an EV. But for a variety of reasons that have been discussed today, EVs are still out of reach for many of us. And this bill attempts to change that. And I'll quickly spin through its provisions. But before I do that, I just want to take a talk for a minute about how this bill came together. The birth of this bill came in a conversation that I had with Amber Backus of the Auto Dealers Association shortly after the governor rolled out the Clean Cars Initiative. Amber and I don't agree on the proposed clean cars regulation. I think the governor is showing phenomenal leadership, and the regulations will be very beneficial to everyday Minnesotans. Amber and her organization, well, you know, they aren't so sure. But we agreed that instead of focusing on that disagreement, we should focus on the places where we do agree, the places where we can work together. And that's what Minnesotans want us to do. And I'm really grateful to Amber and the dealers for their constructive approach on this bill. So in the interest of time, let me just quickly spin through the bill. And then I do have a couple testifiers. I'm also happy to take questions. The bill strengthens existing law to require our state government-owned fleet of vehicles be EVs whenever possible. Second, it requires our auto dealers in the state to get up-to-date training on the fundamentals of EVs. Third, it creates a grant program to help dealers defray the costs that they will incur in transitioning to selling electric vehicles. Fourth, it creates a rebate program to help consumers defray the upfront costs of purchasing new or used EVs. And fifth and finally, it reforms our state's utility regulations to empower our utilities to help them expedite the electrification of our transportation sector. So it's a big bill. It's got a lot of great stuff in it to help all Minnesotans getting access to the benefits of electric transportation. Excited to have it before the committee. Urge your support, and happy to now turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. Would you like to introduce your first testifier?
Yes, my first testifier is Amber Backus of the Auto Dealers.
Ms. Backus, welcome to the committee.
Great, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here today, Mr. Chairman. As Representative Stevenson said, I'm Amber Backus, the Vice President of Public Affairs with the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association. We represent 350 franchise new car dealers across the state that employ over 20,000 Minnesotans. Our members have been selling increasing numbers of EVs over the past 10 years, but they still represent around 1.5% of annual vehicles sold. And as you heard, more EV options are coming online, but there are still significant barriers to consumer adoption, the most prominent being the price differential between EVs and their comparable gas-powered vehicle. That difference is between $10,000 and $15,000. And with the upfront purchase price being the number one factor that influences a consumer's decision about what vehicle to buy, and the higher price, the factor that would most likely deter an interested EV customer from purchasing one, Section 6 of this bill offers a major incentive to overcome the price disparity, and that's consumer rebates. Incentives are what's driving EV adoption in the US. This is borne out by numerous studies and the experience of other states. Most notably, Georgia had a $5,000 EV tax credit on the books, but it was repealed in 2015, causing their EV sales to plummet by 90% from over 2,000 sold in 10,000 sold in 2014 to less than 2,000 in 2015. In fact, when I was before this committee last year testifying on a previous version of this bill, I shared numbers that showed the four states with ZEV supply mandates but no incentives had EV sales in 2018 that were comparable to Minnesota's. Since then, three of those four states have adopted generous incentive programs, which they desperately need if they expect to close the large gap between what they will be mandated to supply in 2025 versus what they are able to sell. Encouraging sales of new EVs will also help spur a used EV market, making cleaner options available to consumers at lower income levels. A 2018 study from University of California, Davis reveals that states that offer EV incentives on new EVs saw at least a 4.5% increase of used EVs in the marketplace. Incentives are what Minnesota needs to drive demand, and our dealers won't be encouraged to order additional EVs if the ones they already have on their lots are taking over 9 months to sell. Besides low consumer demand, another barrier to finding more EVs in the marketplace are the significant investments some dealers are required to make by their manufacturer to become authorized to sell them. This includes the installation of charging stations, special equipment and tools, and certification of mechanics that can cost anywhere from $35,000 to as much as $200,000, depending on the automaker's requirements. A dealer will only make this investment if, one, they have the resources, and two, they believe they can sell enough EVs to recoup the costs. Many dealers lack the capital to make this investment, especially with the uncertain return as the EV market is developing. The grant program established in Section 7 of the bill is a critical tool in overcoming this barrier and will help dealers purchase the infrastructure required to become EV ready. We also want to make sure dealer staff have the tools they need to educate their customers about EVs. The focus of training by the manufacturers often only supports service centers with technical knowledge on maintenance and repairs, leaving sales staff unprepared to discuss and answer typical customer questions about EVs, which often revolve around charging, a topic outside the expertise of the dealership. Having brand neutral, Minnesota-specific curriculum about EVs that at least one dealer staff are required to take, as outlined in Section 4 of the bill, will go a long way to help educate consumers, improve the customer experience, and help new EV owners navigate questions about charging at home and in public. So we're very grateful again to Representative Stevenson for bringing this bill forward and for the time the committee is dedicating to this issue. Its approach of prioritizing EVs in the state fleet and providing incentives is the most meaningful way to get EVs on the road and realize reduced greenhouse gas emissions. As you heard from the earlier presenters and see in the letters of support, this bill provides a solution for promoting EV adoption that is embraced by a wide group of disparate interests who usually don't align on policy proposals. I'm not sure of the last time the Union of Concerned Scientists supported a bill promoted by MADA. But rather than adopting rules, the model for advancing EV policy should be bringing together all stakeholders to rally around a Minnesota-based solution, as this legislation does. So thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Bacchus. Representative Stevenson, would you like to introduce your next testifier?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and if I could just briefly say, you know, I talked a lot about how I really appreciated the constructive opportunity or dialogue that Amber and I have had. I'm also want to take a moment just to say how lucky we are in Minnesota to have a forward-looking collaborative utility like Xcel Energy. We've talked before about their tremendous leadership in the utility space, going to being the first utility in the country going to 100% clean energy. But they're also leaders in the transportation space and have really forward-looking, phenomenal proposals at the Public Utilities Commission right now. And so I'm thrilled to be working with them on this bill too. And so I'd like to introduce the next testifier, Holly Hinman from Xcel Energy.
Ms. Hinman, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning to the members of the committee. My name is Holly Hinman. I work in the regulatory affairs area at XO Energy, and I appreciate the opportunity to be with you today. I offer brief testimony this morning in support of Representative Stevenson's bill, and I appreciate many of the points raised already this morning. We're very grateful for Representative Stevenson's work on this bill. We believe this bill will help encourage utility programs to come forward and help Xcel Energy in particular grow the portfolio of programs that serve our customers with electric vehicles. We currently file a transportation electrification plan with our regulators. This process enables utilities to propose modest or bold customer programs, and stakeholders are encouraged to participate in the public process that shapes the outcome of these programs. Section 5 of Representative Stevenson's bill enhances this process by providing a statutory structure for regulators to lean on as they evaluate utility programs that are proposed through these plans. This bill codifies a practical and efficient framework for reviewing the utility plans that deliver benefits to both customers and communities. This bill promotes electric vehicle adoption and deployment of EV charging infrastructure in a manner that elevates the findings of our regulators into law, including support for programs that produce these specific benefits: efficient use of the grid, reduced air pollution, job growth, customer education, consumer choice, and importantly, transparent outcomes. We believe the foundational language in Section 5 can further unlock these benefits for our Minnesota customers and build on our portfolio of programs to serve customers with EVs. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Ms. Hinman. Next, we will turn to member questions to the bill. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my question is kind of two-part. One, will the state of Minnesota be eligible for the subsidy? And then also, where does the money come from when the state purchases vehicles? Is that from the gas tax?
Representative Stevenson.
So the second question, Mr. Chair, Representative Swazinski, I don't believe the money comes from the gas tax. I could be corrected by House Research or others, but I believe the gas tax is constitutionally dedicated to roads and bridges. It's the only thing that money can be spent on. I see Representative Hornstein is nodding, and even more than House Research, he's probably the expert on the committee on that. Forgive me, your first question was whether the rebates could go to the state. And I am just referencing the bill here. I don't believe so, because I believe that's a defined term as to who can have it. Maybe I could point that question to Mr. Eliff, if he's got his hand up too. So.
Mr. Eliff looks like he's ready to talk to that. Mr. Eliff.
Mr. Chair and Representative Stevenson, I'm looking at page 8 of the bill. Subdivision 3 at the top of the page defines eligible purchasers or lessees. And although in Clause 4, political subdivisions of the state are eligible, it does not.
Representative Swazinski?
So counties and cities will be eligible for the subsidy, but if we're also mandating in the bill that the governments will purchase these vehicles and they cost $10,000 to $15,000 more, what is the fiscal note in the future? How would that react, and how would the Department of Transportation I forget what department actually purchases vehicles for the state, and how would that get hefted also on the backs of taxpayers?
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Swazinski, first of all, I think it's the Department of Administration that mostly does purchasing of fleet vehicles. And it's important to note that it's not, the bill doesn't create a flat requirement that all vehicles be EVs. It strengthens the criteria, which already exists in law, that prioritizes EVs, but does so in a way that makes sure that it's cost effective for taxpayers. As we've heard some testimony here today, electric vehicles are much, much cheaper to own and operate. They require substantially less in terms of maintenance and fuel costs. The state of Minnesota, of course, is in a much better position to absorb the upfront cost differential and save money on the back end than maybe the average consumer. I can tell you from personal experience, again, I've owned an electric vehicle myself for 18 months now, and I haven't had any maintenance on it. I bought a used EV, it had 50,000 miles on it, or it has 50,000 miles on it now, and I have had no maintenance expenses whatsoever, and my fuel costs are much, much, much lower.
Representative Swazinski, do you have a follow-up? Representative Swazinski.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I had it still on mute. Does this bill include costs as far as state charging, as far as employees paying for their charging, while either, you know, at a state building?
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Swazinski, in fact, it does. The first provision, it's the first section of the bill. It's actually pretty narrow. It reflects only to the state capital campus, but we have some charging infrastructure on campus here. It was a suggestion last year. I can't remember if it was your amendment or someone else from your side who offered that as an amendment. I thought it was a good idea. I do recall that Representative Fabian had a standalone bill that I was happy to co-author last year, and so I included it in this year's bill.
Representative Sosinski, final question.
Why only at the state capitol complex? Why not at all state facilities?
Representative Stevenson.
Well, Representative Swazinski, as I mentioned, I believe it was your amendment last year that I took. So maybe I would ask that question back to you.
Representative Swazinski, and then we'll move on to the next question.
Would the chairman be open to including that as an amendment when we're allowed to amend this bill?
Well, Representative Swazinski, when there's amendments allowed to the bill, then we can certainly talk to the author about what the amendment does. Representative Branson.
Chair. Representative Stevenson, on this XXXX piece of paper we have before us, is there an income limit on this bill on who can receive an electric vehicle subsidy?
Representative Stevenson.
You know, Mr. Chair, Representative Branson, I'm trying to refresh my recollection on that. And again, I might ask Mr. Eliff to jump in. I know that was something that we did talk about because it is very important to us that we focus on equity here and ensuring that lower income people have access. I think actually though the limit was on the cost of the vehicle and not on income, but Mr. Eliff can correct me if I'm wrong.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Stevenson is correct. There's a limit on the bill on the rebates that are only eligible for vehicles where the manufacturers suggested base retail price is $60,000 or less. And he was also right about incentives for low-income purchasers or lessees. They get an extra $500 rebate for purchases and an extra $100 rebate for leases if their income is below 150% of the federal poverty level, which right now would mean about $39,300 for a family of four.
Representative Branson.
Mr. Chair, if I could just interject one more thing to say that I think it's an interesting idea worth exploring, Representative Franson. I'd be pleased to work with you on that between now and whenever the bill comes up for a vote.
Representative Franson.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson and Mr. Chair. Yeah, because right at this time right now, I find it shocking that there is no income limit. Members, even Attorney General Keith Ellison opposes ratepayer-funded electric vehicle subsidies because it taxes the rich to pay for the, or taxes the poor to pay for the rich. And so I'm pleased to hear that you're willing to work on that issue. Working people in my district who just want their 2009 pickup truck to start when it's 20 below so they can drive to work, don't want to pay more for their electricity so that some 1%er on Lake Harriet can get a subsidy on their numerous next vehicle. Representative Stevenson, have you chatted with Attorney General on why he opposes these handouts to the rich?
Representative Stevenson.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Franson, I think you are perhaps exaggerating a bit on the Attorney General's position on electric vehicles. I know that Attorney General Ellison is focused on ensuring that we have affordable, fair energy regulations in the state of Minnesota. But I also know that he is an advocate for dealing with climate change and in electrification of the transportation sector. And I think perhaps that you are exaggerating his level of concern about EV rebate programs. But as I mentioned to you a moment ago, I certainly, it's the intent of offering this bill that we are expanding access of EVs to working families in Minnesota. And so I'm not at all opposed to looking at ways to ensure that they aren't taking more advantage of, by, you know, the one percenters on Lake in Representative Hornstein's district, I guess.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Franzen. Thank you, Representative Stevenson. Did you have any following closing comments to your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. This is a great bill, and I hope that we have a chance to vote on it later. It's a great step forward for the state of Minnesota.
Thank you so much, Representative Stevenson. Next, we will be hearing Representative Lee's bill on electric transit bus grants. Representative Lee, please present your bill to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members, for the opportunity to present this bill to appropriate $4.1 million for the renewable development account to the MAC Council to require them to purchase electric buses. And members, you know, according to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, motor vehicles account for half of all carbon monoxide and hydrocarbon emissions in Minnesota. And we already heard from Mr. Kolash from the MPCA on this. These emissions can contribute to health problems, including respiratory issues, heart conditions, and elevated risk of cancer. Other studies have shown that long-term exposure to traffic-related pollution significantly increases the risk of asthma in children. And while buses have generally been viewed as more environmental friendly option due to the fact that they could help reduce the number of cars on the road by carrying a large number of people, they still contribute to emissions that impact air quality, particularly in the cities. Mr. Chair, members, this bill will help communities with high health disparities like mine, where the community members have been identified as areas of concentrated poverty, where 50% or more of the residents are people of color and are at risk for both asthma and heart conditions. I want to add that some of these communities may also have some of the most frequented bus route, like route number 5, going through my district from Brooklyn Center down to the Mall of America in Bloomington. To the bill in front of us, it restricts Metro Transit's ability to buy diesel buses until the appropriation in Section 2 is used up. The appropriation must be spent on the difference in cost between diesel and electric buses because electric buses cost more on the front end, and this fund is designed to pay for that additional cost. Just so that you know, we have some data from Metro Transit that 40 feet battery electric buses is an additional $6,000 per bus, and then the 60 feet buses is an additional $570,000. Mr. Chair, this is a smart investment because of the positive health impact that it will have for the communities who are dependent on transit, and clean electric buses will reduce air pollutants and lessen the health burden for these communities throughout the metropolitan region.
Thank you so much, Representative Lee. And I believe you have one testifier to your bill. Would you care to introduce your testifier?
It'd be great if you can, Mr. Chair.
I'd be happy to. I believe it is Ms. Anjali Baines with Fresh Energy.
Wonderful. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Baines.
Thank you for having me. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Anjali Baines, and I'm speaking today on behalf of Fresh Energy. We appreciate the opportunity to share our perspective on Representative Lee's bill to support electric transit bus purchases for Met Council out of existing funds set aside in the Renewable Development Account. Fresh Energy supports and commends the efforts of the Metropolitan Council and Metro Transit to electrify their bus fleet. We also recognize the need to support this transition with funding to remove the upfront cost barrier for this newer, cleaner technology that will provide both customers and operators benefits in the long run. There are a few reasons why electric transit buses make sense. First, while our transportation future is electric, we will not achieve our climate and equity goals by only electrifying our personal vehicles. Electric transit buses provide the benefits of zero-emission transportation to those who rely on public transportation to move around and who cannot or choose not to own or use a personal car. Electric transit buses also benefit the health of bus drivers who experience prolonged exposure to diesel exhaust and other vehicle fumes while operating their routes. Second, planning for electric transit buses is easier than many other types of vehicles. Not only is technology maturing rapidly with multiple reliable vendors and manufacturers in the market, including our St. Cloud-based New Flyer, but the established routes and timetables of transit means that charging infrastructure can be precisely designed and installed to meet the service needs of transit agencies. We also have the added benefit of in-house expertise within Metro Transit. Given their success in electrifying the Sea Line in Minneapolis with 8 electric buses, thereby gaining important learnings of how to best use this new and exciting clean technology. Finally, as Representative Lee mentioned, Electrifying transit is especially important given the legacy of discrimination that has placed busy thoroughfares through communities of color and under-resourced neighborhoods. By prioritizing electric bus routes through such neighborhoods, we can ensure that the benefits of electric transit accrue first to those who most need it. Metro Transit is committed to electrifying its fleets and wants to do the right thing for our climate, our health, and its customers. We support enabling the goals of electrification with legislation like this bill. Thank you for your time and opportunity to speak today, and I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you so much, Ms. Baines. I see we have two questions. Representative Munson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is for Ms. Baines. Can you tell me the amount of lithium, cobalt, nickel, and graphite that are in these batteries that you're promoting for these buses, and how what the quantity is of each of those? And if you don't know that today, I don't expect you to know the numbers offhand, but if you could follow up with me and tell me how many pounds of each of those minerals are in the batteries, I'll be using that for hopefully an amendment when this bill comes back to the committee and we're actually allowed to offer amendments to make the bill better.
Ms. Bain.
Sure, thank you, Chair and Representative. You've taken the words out of my mouth. I don't have the numbers on me, but I'm happy to look them up and get back to you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Baines. Representative Bowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm not sure who these questions or this question would go to. The first one, it could be Ms. Baines, it could be the bill author, but do we know how far, how long an electric bus can travel between charges? I'm kind of wondering just the whole concept of how that works on a route and whether it has to be a short route so they can go back and recharge or can they go for some distance in some time?
Representative Lee?
Mr. Chair, I could follow up with Representative Bowen and the committee on that. I don't have the data in front of me, but I'm sure that the Metro Transit will have that readily available for us.
Very good. Mr. Chair, may I ask one more question?
You may.
Thank you. With that in mind, or perhaps completely independent of that, I'm sure the suburban opt-outs would also welcome some funding for electric buses and not have all the funding go to Met Council and Metro Transit only. So thank you.
Representative Lee.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And Representative Bowa, I think that, this is, critically needed. And, if the other transit service providers want to do this, I think that this is something that, we should definitely take a look at, because we know that, this is going to impact all communities, and we definitely do not want them to face some of these health impacts that, I'm seeing in my community, in my district today.
Thank you.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just, in listening to this back and forth, I had this really ingenious idea, and I think Mr. Hornstein or Representative Hornstein is still on this meeting, perhaps we should schedule a time to go tour the New Flyer bus manufacturer up in St. Cloud, when we could learn all kinds of things about electric buses.
Representative Mecklen, that's a great suggestion. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Representative Mecklen. Yes, the Transportation Committee did tour the facility last year, and it's certainly a very, very worthwhile trip. And, I would certainly want to collaborate with Chair Long in doing something like that, perhaps, when it's safe to do so.
Great suggestion, Representative Mecklen. Representative Lee, any closing comments to your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for this opportunity. And like I said, we should definitely make this investment so that we could protect the health of the residents who are impacted and who are, transit dependent every single day on these transit line. And so appreciate the consideration, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Representative Lee. Next, we will be hearing about Representative Hollins' bill on electric school bus grants. Representative Hollins, please present your bill.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members, for hearing about this bill. So this is really a very modest bill in which utility companies may file with public utility program to promote the deployment of school buses that are electric. So with this program, if a school district chooses to purchase one or more electric school buses, the public utility can provide a rebate to the school district for the difference in cost between an electric school bus and a standard school bus. The school district would be responsible for the maintenance and upkeep of said electric school bus, and the school district and utility company would work together to deploy the school bus where there is chronically poor air quality. This is a really important measure to both me and people in my community. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency emission calculator estimates that the replacement of a diesel bus with an electric one eliminates 54,000 pounds of greenhouse gas emissions annually. And conversion can also provide a cost savings for school districts. Pilot programs in other states have shown that operation and maintenance costs for electric buses can be up to 60% less expensive than their diesel buses, and that districts can see a savings of approximately $7,000 per bus annually when fuel cost reductions are also factored in. So it's really a win-win situation. On top of that, anybody who's ridden in a school bus knows what it's like to sit in that sort of dust of diesel fumes. It's very unpleasant, and a number of different studies have suggested that this forced exposure to air pollution is having measurable negative effects on students in a variety of ways. So diesel exhaust has been repeatedly demonstrated to have negative impacts on the health of children, especially children with asthma or other upper respiratory issues, which is especially relevant now that we're in this COVID-19 pandemic, which is upper respiratory issues. Diesel exhaust is also a known carcinogen with ties specifically to lung cancer. And interestingly, a 2019 study in Georgia showed that school districts that had invested in cleaner running school buses had higher standardized test scores than those that did not. And they actually controlled for a couple of other considerations in there and still show that they had better test scores. So, we're also talking about the achievement gap here. For those reasons alone, I believe that we need to reconsider how we transport our most precious cargo, our children. Also importantly, this bill would allow school districts to provide a tangible display of their commitment to address climate change. Our students are taught to recycle, to save energy, to respect nature, to prioritize reusable materials, and yet every morning they wait at their bus stop for outdated diesel buses that spend half their time idling and spewing exhaust. And this bill really provides school districts with the opportunity to practice what they preach and to show students every day the commitment that they've made. I wanted to really quickly address Representative Franzen brought up some equity concerns, and I think that's one of the reasons why I really love both public buses and school buses being electrified. When we look at transportation options other than individual cars, many of the people in my district don't have the resources to pursue an electric vehicle, even with cost-saving measures, but their children do take school buses 5 days a week, approximately 9 months out of the year. So this really is something that would impact these children's day-to-day lives, regardless of their income level. Discussions with stakeholders are ongoing, but I do have two testifiers available to speak on this bill today.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. I believe first we will hear from Ms. Holly Hinman.
Thank you and good morning. Once again, my name is Holly Hinman. I worked in the regulatory affairs area, as I mentioned previously, and appreciate the opportunity to be with you to speak in support of Representative Hollins' bill. We appreciate Representative Hollins' work on this bill, and we definitely share the excitement for the potential to bring forward programs that encourage the use of electric school buses, and additionally, the potential for generating learnings related to effective programs in this space. Similar to Representative Stevenson's bill that we discussed earlier, we see potential for this bill as a tool to encourage new utility programs and for providing a helpful framework for review by our regulators. Haven't had a ton of time to review the bill in detail, but definitely looking forward to working collaboratively with Representative Hollins as this bill moves forward. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Ms. Hinman. Next, we're once again from Ms. Baines.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and good morning again. As I mentioned earlier, my name is Anjali Baines, and I'm the Senior Clean Transportation Manager of Fresh Energy. We appreciate the opportunity to share brief thoughts on the electric school bus program that Representative Hollins' proposed bill seeks to establish. Fresh Energy supports the goal of reducing pollution by electrifying school buses here in Minnesota, and we believe that this proposed bill is a really good starting point for a broader discussion about the role school bus electrification can play in reducing both climate change causing and health harming pollution while providing multiple public benefits to Minnesotans. There are three main reasons we see this approach as one that is worthy of consideration. First, electric school buses operate without tailpipe emissions, which reduces exposure to air pollution for kids as they're bused to and from school each day. According to the US EPA, diesel exhaust is designated as carcinogenic to humans and contains significant levels of particulate matter. Because children's respiratory systems are still developing, they are generally more vulnerable to the negative health impacts of these pollutants than adults. Second, electric school bus programs have the potential to do double duty as on-grid storage. For example, a recent pilot project in New York State between the White Plains School District and their utility, Con Edison, successfully modeled how electric school buses could provide backup power onto the grid, in addition to their primary use in serving the transportation needs of the school district. Third, we see programs like these as valuable market signals to manufacturers and suppliers that Minnesota is open to innovative technologies such as electric school buses, and that our state is going to be a good place for these companies to do business. Minnesota is already home to the New Flyer, as I mentioned, and there is no reason why we can't double down on this success and develop a complementary industry niche with electric school bus manufacturing as well. In closing, we'd like to note that we see this legislation and today's hearings as an important start to a robust conversation about the right paths forward for Minnesota to pursue opportunities around school bus electrification. We believe, as Holly noted, that close consultation with Minnesota's utilities and other stakeholders is a critical next step and look forward to supporting these conversations however we can. Thank you for your time and opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you so much, Ms. Baines. I see we have five questions, and I'm still hoping we can get to Representative Bierman's bill. So if we can keep it to one question each and be brief, that would be much appreciated. Representative Munson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Representative Hollins, I know that this is just an informational hearing. We can't amend your bill or ask for changes to the bill, but I know there's a lot of people talking about the impact of people of color, of this bill, of the many of the energy bills. And I think that some of the things we're teaching our kids about slavery today is ignorant of the mining that's going on for these batteries. And so I would ask your opinion of whether or not you'd be supportive of an amendment when this does come back to actually ban slavery from being used in the supply chain of this battery. I know that battery technology is advancing. And they're looking at, increasing the supply of nickel in the batteries to reduce or eliminate cobalt altogether. Would you be interested in working together on an amendment so that we can actually prohibit slavery, specifically child slavery, from being used to manufacture the batteries from these buses?
Representative Hollins.
I'm certainly interested in having that conversation with you, Representative Munson. I think we all agree that child slavery is not something that we are in favor of. I think we can universally say that. I don't know how much that comes into play in particular in this setting, but I'm happy to continue conversations with you. Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And these minerals are in limited supply, and school buses, while it's appropriate to try to electrify as many vehicles as possible, school buses are not used as many miles as city buses. They sit dormant, which is one of the reasons why they make a great place for storing energy to use on the grid, because we don't use them all day long. Diesel buses, with the depth of diesel exhaust fluid put into the engines to reduce the particulate matter going out into the atmosphere, has adverse effects because it causes so many errors because they don't work well when the bus is idle or take short trips. So a lot of school bus operators are actually going back to gasoline engines because the diesel exhaust fluid requirements are so restrictive on the engines. We need to do something to make our buses more clean. But I think we should work to make sure that these batteries are sourced appropriately and we're not using slavery. This is something we shouldn't be sticking our kids on 2,000 pounds of battery that's been mined in third world countries using slave labor. So thank you.
Representative Swiecinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry about that. Just a question to the author of the bill. It sounds like this is going to mandate higher electric rates on ratepayers in Xcel Territory, Minnesota Power, Otter Tail. Why not? It's the schools that obviously operate that or their contractor. Why wouldn't you just, instead of just mandating
that, why don't you just mandate it on the school district? Like, you know, if you got Minneapolis, why don't you just mandate Minneapolis school district do this? You know, I mean, these are locally made decisions. School boards can decide what bus they want to buy. Why are we doing this from a state down? Let these locals decide.
Representative Holland.
Yeah, thank you for that question. I think what we're looking at here is really an incentive program to allow schools to be able to do it if they want to. As I said before, we're still in conversation about what this would look like and what cost recovery would look like for this and how we might proceed forward. We're very mindful of the fact that, you know, that this would impact rate payer. I will say that if we look at pilot programs that have been done in other states, the increase was fairly minimal over the cost, over the course of, you know, the number of people that it's spread across. And so I think that this is still a really good option, especially, you know, as we look at school districts that might not have as many resources as other school districts do, to be able to try to pursue something like this. And especially knowing that statistically, the districts that have probably worst air quality are the ones that often don't have as much funding and resources.
Representative Susinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, this is essentially just a tax on ratepayers. Why not just, I mean, a school district is already set up to tax. Why not just tax? I mean, you're just raising taxes here, it seems like, to do this.
Sounds like you have an idea for potentially another bill, Representative Susinski.
No, Mr. Chair.
Representative Franzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hollins. So quick question, and I meant to ask this with Representative Stevenson's bill too, but it's also applicable to your bill, Representative Hollins. How do the electric vehicle subsidies work under this bill with the EV subsidies in the ECHO Act? Is it possible to stack those subsidies?
Representative Hollins, maybe you could phone a friend with Ms. Hinman.
Yes, that was exactly what I was going to do. Ms. Hinman, are you able to field this question?
Ms. Hinman.
Thank you. Unfortunately, I'm not as familiar with the other bill at this time, so I don't think I'm prepared to respond to that question, Mr. Chair. My apologies.
No problem. We can try to follow up with an answer, Representative Franzen.
Yeah.
Representative Franzen.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, if you could get an answer for that, that'd be great. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Representative Franzen. Representative Hollins, any closing comments?
I just want to thank the committee for hearing, hearing about this bill, and I would, restate how important it is for us to demonstrate to our children that this is something that we're committed to and something that's important to us as Minnesotans. So I encourage you all to ask those good questions and help us continue the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. Representative Bierman, we are going to squeeze you in. Please present your bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members, for hearing the bill. I'm pleased to present this bill on EV charging stations in our state parks. Now, we all have learned or knew that most charging is done at home. It is as high as 80%, we heard today, but as more electric vehicles arrive on our roads, we need to expand the availability of stations everywhere people travel. And many businesses have realized the importance and the benefit of providing charging stations out front to lure customers to park and plug while they shop. Target and Walgreens come to mind, and now especially I'm seeing it more across hotel chains across the country as they expand this customer service to attract customers. So I speak to a lot of people about EVs here in Minnesota, and there is this trepidation about the range of electric vehicles for many consumers. Expanding our EV infrastructure is fundamental to supporting Minnesota's transition away from fossil fuels and towards cleaner, more renewable sources of energy. Now, there are other bills in the works here at the legislature, as we're hearing about, for charging venues in the city and for our corridors. But this bill addresses a need for expansion to greater Minnesota beyond the transportation corridors to points of interest for many Minnesotans. our state parks. As you know, these are busy places. Our citizenry arrive at our parks to recharge their bodies and mind with clean air and some solitude. This infrastructure will contribute to that effort of cleaner air, less emission. Their cars will need to recharge too, and the distance will sometimes test their range. This destination charging, pay-as-you-go charge arrangement will also benefit the DNR. The DNR wants the traffic. The DNR will need the stations for their own fleets as they transition. So installing charging stations is a very practical step that serves both the public and our agency. So this bill will utilize some RDA funds as intended to promote the startup, expansion, and attraction of renewable energy. And the plan is for the DNR to help advise on the preferred sites for the charging stations. Presently, there are very few charging points in our state park system. This bill seeks to address this issue. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have some representatives from the DNR with us today for comments as well and to assist in answering any questions.
Thank you so much. Deputy Director Leversedge, welcome to the committee, and if you could be brief as we're running out of time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. I'm glad to be here to speak. First of all, my name is Phil Leversedge. I'm the Deputy Director for State Parks and Trails, and I'm glad to be here today to speak in support of Representative Bierman's bill. We worked with him 2 years ago on a draft of the bill, and we continue to be supportive. We do have four charging stations in our state park system right now, two of them on the North Shore, one at Fort Snelling, and one in Northwest Minnesota. And they're very well received by our visitors. I would say they're getting moderate use, and each year the use appears to be increasing. Each of those was put in as a pilot project with the local utility companies, and they were put in as a free charging system. But we've since been working with Representative Bierman on a pay-as-you-go proposal for future charging stations. And as far as the DNR's efforts to convert some of our fleet to electric, we have four fully electric vehicles in our state parks now, and they've been really well received. They have low cost to operate once the initial investments are made, and of course they are contributing to lower greenhouse gas emissions, and they're consistent with our mission. So with that, I'll just offer to be available to help answer questions.
Thank you so much, Deputy Director. Appreciate you being here. Representative Bierman, thank you for presenting your bill. We are out of time for today. Members, please tune in if you can to Representative Fornstein's meeting later today. Representative Franzen, we're over time. Is it a very, very short question?
Mr. Chair, just wondering, will you be bringing these bills back individually so we have a chance to amend and to ask more questions on?
Sorry. Representative Franzen, these bills will be coming back. We can't move a bill without having it available for amendment.
But as individual bills, sir?
Representative Franzen, that's unlikely. They'll likely be packaged in a finance bill, as we always do with a renewable development account. So with that, members, we are out of time. Please tune in to Representative Fornstein's committee this afternoon for the rest of Electric Vehicle Day. And with that, we are adjourned.